2 years ago, the World Health Organization decided to confront HIV head-on. It set a target. 3 million people in developing countries would get medicines that could save their lives by the end of 2005. Now is the time to find out if they've succeeded or failed. I'm Nigel Wrench, and in the first programme in this series, I travelled to Malawi in Central Africa. I heard how lives have been transformed by pills like the ones I take to live with HIV. How certain death can become productive life.
ARV is a good drug. This is not bad. It's a good drug. I am alive. I stand.
But I also found out that 10 Malawians still die of AIDS every hour. In this BBC World Service programme, you'll be coming with me to the country with more HIV-infected people than anywhere else, South Africa. If the right medication is now available, why aren't patients queuing up to get the treatment?
There's so much stigma, so much disbelief, so much distrust of a conventional medical approach. A large proportion of the South African population will not take treatment under any circumstance.
Also, as the year nears its end, some hard questions for the man in charge at the World Health Organization. He makes a surprising admission.
I have to say that I am personally extremely disappointed in myself and in my colleagues because we haven't moved quickly enough. We haven't saved enough lives. So it's hard to sit back and rejoice when you know that so many people are dying.
But first, to the streets of Johannesburg, South Africa, and a district of apartment blocks.
This is Hillbrow. It's the most densely populated urban area in Africa. Hundreds of thousands of people crammed into a square kilometre. High-rises all around, all squalid, all the diseases of poverty that you could possibly care about. Unemployment, drug use, prostitution.
Dr. Francois Venter, one of South Africa's leading experts on HIV and AIDS. He's standing outside his clinic in the summer sunshine as the street life of Hillbrow bustles around him.
What are the HIV rates like here? How many people have got HIV?
It's a guesstimate, but we think between 20 and 30% and possibly higher. And certainly amongst the high-risk groups, sex workers, it would be much higher than that. So, yeah, I mean, in terms of numbers of people requiring treatment, this is the epicenter. We anticipate probably 10,000 immediately need treatment, but, you know, that number's going to grow very, very rapidly as the epidemic matures.
How many are you treating now?
2,500. So, yeah. Less than a quarter of what's required.
All around us, it's a sunny day, I can't see it. There's an AIDS epidemic ravaging this population.
Absolutely. I doubt there's a single person walking in front of you who hasn't had first-hand experience with HIV. It's a low-key, stigmatized, kept under the covers, barely visible problem. It's just where you see it is at the hospitals, in the clinics, you know, the face of it, absenteeism at work. It's ravishing the country.
This, you know, looks like a street in any city anywhere in the world, people going about their business, catching cabs, some women pushing a baby, children playing. There's this hidden killer.
Absolutely, and it's going to remain hidden until we can deal with the stigma, until we can provide effective treatment, until we've dealt with it as a society with the urgency and the immediacy that it's actually required.
3x5, whatever the targets are, HIV is all around here.
Absolutely, and the quicker we get to 3x5, you know, the more hopefully it will remain not hidden and we'll actually be able to deal with it in a real way. But 3x5 needs to happen, and needs to happen quickly. That gets measured every single day in lives.
3TC, lamivudine, 150 milligram. Prevnar, gestoxerine, 600 milligram.
Up the road at Johannesburg General Hospital, one of the biggest on the African continent, the drugs are available free of charge after a small initial payment.
Then we've got the DDI, which is Vyrex, 100 milligram.
These are all the ARVs?
These are the ARVs.
The pills are the so-called ARVs. It stands for antiretrovirals. They can control HIV, so patients remain healthy. The South African government's program of treatment only began on the 1st of April last year. It's one reason why the World Health Organization target for this country will be so comprehensively missed. One of those in charge here is Dr. Judy Gale Kirk.
I'm looking out at your clinic now. A lot of very well-looking people. Tell me who these people are.
Yes. Yeah, no, we've had amazing results just with the implementation of ARVs. The differences have been amazing. I mean, I've had patients come up to me, tap me on the shoulder, and it's like, hi, doc. And I'm like, right, hello, and who are you, you know? Seriously.
You don't recognize them?
And have not. It's been an absolute blessing.
Because they look so much different because of taking the pills.
Yeah, no, it's been fantastic. We've had some really amazing results. And I think that's been the blessing, is actually not recognizing your patients X amount of time down the road. So that's been awesome.
How many lives do you think these ARVs have saved at your clinic?
We're talking hundreds. We're talking patients that were literally dying, and we just threw ARVs at them as a last resort, saying, you know, we're going to just give you all available now because the treatment is accessible and available, and it's been an absolute blessing. I mean, it's a blessing when patients come up to you and say, thank you, the clinic, for saving my life, you know. So it has been a great, great learning curve.
Fellow South Africans who are HIV positive, I would like to say to them, this is not the end of the world. It's a matter of accepting that you are HIV positive, then you will live positively. The medication is there.
Sipiwe's story is one of secrets and stigma. He's a man in his 30s with glasses, and he didn't want to give me his real name. It begins to explain why at this hospital in Johannesburg, despite the huge number of people in this city who could benefit from HIV treatment, there's no queue at the door.
If you can desist from this thing of associating it with being dirty, then I think that's the reason why people are really ready to come forward and say, hey, I'm HIV positive. But once really it's accepted as one of those diseases, well, I think everybody would be willing to come forward and then get their medication. That's why some people really are having those silent deaths. They know somewhere they may have it, but they don't want to know.
Silent death.
Silent death, really. Silent death.
What did we do, Thabo Mbeki? What did we do? A protest song from the Treatment Action Campaign, which for years demanded from the South African president the sort of treatment program that is now in place. The campaigners argue that President Mbeki's delay in making the pills available and his very public doubts about their effectiveness has condemned thousands, perhaps hundreds of thousands of South Africans to the silent death that Sipiwe talks about. 5 million people need HIV treatment in South Africa. The World Health Organization wanted 600,000 to 900,000 South Africans on treatment as part of the 3x5 program. Just 76,000 are now getting the pills they need to stay alive, though. Our requests for an interview with the Chief Director for AIDS in the South African Department of Health went unanswered. In Heilbrow, Dr. Francois Venter does have a plan, but he needs some help.
We just have to get to the stage where everybody's testing in this country. And I think there needs to be quite a far more robust debate. At the moment, within WHO and within the general HIV community, there's this big opt-in, opt-out debate. And for me, it's a stupid debate because it's about testing when somebody's sick. And that's way too late. We need to test people when they're healthy. And that's not a Department of Health problem. It's a societal engineering problem. It's how do we get people to test for HIV? I also think it would be useful for the president to come out and say unequivocally, we think everyone should get an HIV test and everyone should go and be assessed by their local clinic. It would go a long way towards breaking some of the stigma. Particularly my poorer patients are very, very scared of antiretrovirals. They're constantly telling me about side effects. They're terrified because they've heard it so much. The antiretroviral monster's been drummed up so much in the media by, you know, all these players, including, unfortunately, by these most senior government people.
Every day in South Africa, between 600 and 1,000 people die of AIDS. That's a death every 2 minutes. I'm Nigel Wrench. You're listening to 3x5. For the BBC World Service, I'm investigating the World Health Organization's programme to treat 3 million people with life-saving HIV drugs by the end of this year. And this is the sound of a machine that manufactures life. It's in a factory in a town called Pune in India, and it makes those life-saving drugs. The cheap ARV pills that people around the world now take to control HIV. The factory is part of a company called Cipla, owned by Yusuf Hamid.
Can I show you something?
Yes, of course.
Here's a photograph of a man in a village in the north of Malawi. Do you recognize the pills he's holding?
Yes, I can. I think this pill is Triamune that he's using, which is a simpler pill.
This man was bedridden for 2 years. Now he takes your pills, and you can see how well he is.
We are today supplying HIV drugs to 90 countries in the world. And currently the prices range from about $140 per patient per year to around $200 per patient per year, depending on the area, the quantities, etc. And essentially, these are today being provided in Latin America and mainly in sub-Saharan Africa, countries like Malawi, Senegal, Congo, Ivory Coast, etc. And you'll be interested to know that we are today providing medications to over 400,000 patients worldwide. That is about 40% of the people who are being treated in the world today are on Cipla's HIV medications, and this gives me personally a great deal of satisfaction.
The pills he makes are copies of the original drugs. That's why they're so cheap. But they work just as well. And Mr. Hamid has a direct appeal to everyone with HIV. Think of this as an ordinary illness, one that his pills can easily treat.
Out of 40 million today who are HIV positive, only actually 6 million require treatment. 34 million do not require to be treated. It's not a death sentence. They get treatment at the first signs of some abnormality, like if they get a cold which doesn't go or they lose their appetite. Then they go to the doctor and get treated.
Your message to BBC World Service listeners seems to be, look, the AIDS crisis is a bit simpler than maybe it's being made out to be.
I would say it is a bit simpler than it's made out to be, except that it is spreading rapidly in countries like China, India, Russia. Now, it is estimated by the World Bank that by the year 2015, there'll be 75 million HIV-positive worldwide. Now, that is a very, very frightening figure.
But everyone who's HIV-positive has to take these pills for the rest of their lives, and more people need the treatment. If the stigma of HIV can be overcome in South Africa, that country's mineral riches ensure there's potentially the money to pay for the treatment, even though so many people need it. But in poorer countries, cash is a critical issue, however cheap Mr. Hamid's pills are. In Malawi, in Central Africa, for instance, the drugs are only available because rich countries pay for them through an international body called the Global Fund. I spoke to Biswik Mwale, the head of the Malawi National AIDS Commission.
The Global Fund has been very catalytic. There's no doubt about that. But what we want to see with the Global Fund is more commitments from the rich nations to fund the Global Fund so that they can do this good work that is happening in our countries. If you go around, you will see all those people on the ARVs and they're pretty happy. This is largely because of the Global Fund. But the funding for the Global Fund is also dwindling. One would want to see the rich nations committing more resources to the Global Fund so that some of these programs could be scaled up.
How much money do you have for all of this, for these ARVs, these pills? How much money do you need?
You know, what you are seeing now is the impact of the HIV infection that happened some 5-6 years ago. So as you go, the number of AIDS patients will be increasing. So you are talking somewhere around 150 million, 300 million maybe in the coming 2 years or 3 years or so. That will be required if you want to behave like, to do like Botswana or Brazil. Brazil, for example, that has put 100% of its population that need ARVs on ARVs.
Are you going to get all this money?
Well, it's an ambition. I think it's a wish. I hope we can get the money because we're not dealing with numbers. We are dealing with people. We are dealing with lives. And life is precious. If there's anything to sustain life, I think I would want to appeal to the international community out there. Please, let's help. Because we're dealing with lives.
The two biggest contributors to this global fund are America and Britain. In London, I went to see Hilary Benn. He's the International Development Secretary, the British government minister responsible for help to poorer countries.
These ARV pills to control HIV, it's medication for life. Can you give a commitment to World Service listeners that Britain and the other rich countries will put up enough money, say in a country like Malawi that relies on outside assistance to pay for these pills, enough money to pay for treatment for life?
This is the absolutely crucial question, because if you are the Minister of Health, you need to know you're going to have the resources available and that you have the staff in order to be able to deliver the treatment and monitor. And one of the big issues we have to face up to in the international system is helping developing countries to have predictable and reliable sources of money. And rising aid should do that. Debt cancellation will do it. But what people can't cope with is getting some money this year and less next year, because you need to know what you can rely on in order to enter into long-term commitments. And we have some way to go. But those are just three examples of things that we've been doing as the UK to try and answer that question.
If 3x5, though, has put one man in a village in Malawi on drugs that have saved his life, how awful would it be that international money wasn't there to continue a long and productive life?
Of course it's going to be awful for individuals. However, when you look at what we've achieved, a trebling of the number of people on ARVs in sub-Saharan Africa in the last 12 months, that is progress. The Global Fund is getting increasing amounts of money, and commitments made during the course of 2005, in which the British government played an important part in putting Africa at the centre of our G8 presidency, the EU development ministers agreeing significant increases in aid. This puts us in a better position to try and offer reassurance to people that international support will be available. But in the long term, developing countries want to be able to raise their own resources for development. They want to be able to pay for their own health service. And the best way to do that, alongside fighting AIDS, is to help those countries to develop, to get investment in, because with investment comes jobs, comes incomes, more government revenue, and then in the long term, countries are able to look after themselves. That's what we're working to achieve, but we have to deal with this crisis, because it's immediate and it's now.
So, from the British government minister, there's no guarantee to these children playing in a village in the north of Malawi that their parents will receive for life the drugs they need to stay alive. At the World Health Organization, as its 3x5 programme reaches its end, they know that money remains one of the critical issues, whether it's cash for pills or cash to pay nurses and doctors. Dr. Jim Kim is the head of the 3x5 programme. His job is almost finished now. They haven't counted all the numbers yet, but he knows he's missed his target.
There's 12 countries in Latin America that are going to reach their target. Uganda is going to reach their target. Zambia is working very hard to reach their target. Kenya is also working very hard to reach their target. Thailand has already reached their target. Several countries in the Southeast Asian region will reach their target. So we hope to have 15 or 20 countries who've reached their target by the end of 2005.
Which haven't?
Well, of course, the big ones are the ones that we're most concerned about. The biggest countries are South Africa, Nigeria, and India in terms of number of people needing treatment. But in each of those countries, we see real movement. We'd like to see faster movement, of course. We'd like to see faster movement everywhere.
It's failed.
No, I don't think the initiative has failed. I'd say we didn't reach the 3 million. But the question is, have we saved lives? Have we accelerated the process of getting people on treatment? I think there's no question that we've done that. In terms of actually reaching the target, we won't do it by the end of 2005, but we hope to do it soon after.
What about those 2 million people who should be on treatment by the end of the year who aren't? They're dying.
Yes, we feel terrible about that. The one thing that we're extremely disappointed in is that we've not been able to save more lives. But this is what it's about. And you have to remember, before 3x5, there was not an emphasis on saving lives. Many leaders in the world in public health, also philanthropists and others, were saying, you know, we just have to forget about this generation of people who are infected. We're really thinking about the next generation. So something has happened that's extraordinary.
So say, what, 1 million, perhaps 1.5 million, if we're optimistic, on treatment by the end of the year. What, 1.5, 2 million people not on that treatment. What can you say to those people? Or, if they've died, what can you say to their families?
I think we have to all say, especially those of us who work in the global public health field, those of us who have access to resources, those of us who can meet with leaders and politicians, I think all we can do is apologize. I think we have to just admit we've not done enough and we started way too late.
So there's an apology from the World Health Organization, because on paper, 3x5 has failed dismally. The life-saving pills have reached only about half the people they were supposed to.
But 3x5 has, for the first time, produced in the developing world an optimism and energy about dealing with HIV that seemed impossible just 2 years ago. Citizens of the world's poorest countries are finding out for themselves what I've found out over the years. It's possible to live a long and productive life with HIV instead of dying a terrible death from AIDS. So now Dr. Kim and the World Health Organization have the task of reaching a new target. Because at a meeting in July, the G8 group, that's the world's richest countries, said in 5 years' time, by the end of 2010, as near as possible, everyone who needs it will have treatment for HIV. That's around 10 million people, and they call it universal access.
So here's a new target, 10 by 10, if you like, this universal access comes down to, by the end of 2010, 10 million people who've got HIV on this medication. Is it going to happen?
Well, I'm going to do everything I can to make it happen. But let me also say that because of the commitment of the leaders of the G8 countries, we have now a tremendous amount of leverage. We will hold them to this target. We will hold them to their promise, and we will continue to make clear what's needed to reach this target. You know, let me tell you something. I've been working on trying to deliver healthcare to the poorest populations in both hemispheres, Western and Eastern Hemisphere, for about 20 years. And some people say, well, you know, you're always too optimistic. But let me tell you something. In this business, optimism is not the result of cold, calculated analysis. Optimism is a moral choice. Because if you look at the situation that many countries are in, it's very easy to throw in the towel and say, it's too complicated, it's too difficult, we'll never get there. And that's what most people were saying prior to 3x5 and other treatment programs. Optimism is a requirement. And it's a moral choice that all of us have to make. Because if we're not optimistic and we don't think we can do it, then many, many people will be doomed to death. No matter where we are in 2010, I hope that I'll come to you with another message of optimism in the sense that we can do a lot if we simply commit to it.
I'm Nigel Wrench. You've been listening to 3x5, produced for the BBC World Service by David Cook at All Out Productions. You can listen to the complete series at any time and also get additional background notes on each programme. Just go to bbcworldservice.com and click Documentary Archive to find the site.